Page 121, Section 2.
Okay, now think about a mosaic for a minute. The nations of the world, whether old or new, small or large, populous or not, rich or impoverished, are as dissimilar as the separate tiles or pieces of a mosaic. However, taken as a whole, these seemingly different nations somehow fit together to form a beautifully textured yet complicated mosaic called the global economy. Global economy. While dissimilar in one sense, all the nations of the world share one thing in common. Each must confront the same limitations inherent in economic reality. Yes?
What do you mean by same limitations?
Good question. What I mean by that is, regardless of their political philosophies or ideologies or the magnitude of their wealth, all nations are constrained by the scarcity of the resources they have to produce a seemingly unlimited amount of things, the necessities and luxuries that people want and need. Now, only a fool would suggest that the world's economies are not constrained by scarcity. What I mean is, even for the most wealthy nations, the richest of nations, it's impossible to produce nutritious food, housing, clothing, education, and medical care simply by boop, 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 pressing a few buttons. The reality is that we do not live in a world where perpetual abundance rules, where people and nations lack nothing, where everything is free just for the taking and just for the asking. All of the resources nations need to produce the things that people desire are never free. There's always a cost involved. But, like the expression, the wealth or the riches of a nation, the term cost means more than monetary value. For example, economists often use an expression that gets at the essence of costs. There's no such thing as a free lunch. You've all heard that, right? No such thing as a free lunch. By this, they mean that every choice and every decision made by individuals or collectively by nations necessarily involves a give and take. Here's an example. A farmer's decision to use an acre of land to produce corn means that the same acre cannot be used at the same time to graze and raise sheep. So, economists say that the cost of producing more corn to make breakfast cereal means that fewer wool sweaters and dresses can be produced. Well, more generally, if a nation decides, however these decisions are reached, to devote more of its scarce resources to manufacture steel, to build ocean-going ships, to construct superhighways and defense systems, the fewer resources will be available to produce other things, such as healthcare, food, housing, stereos, DVDs, and education. So, to produce some of these things, nations are constrained by their scarce resources to produce less of other things. This is called a trade-off. Trade-off. So, a trade-off, and this is at the very heart of economic reality. How have the nations around the world addressed this universally shared problem of economic trade-off? Okay, let's take a look at the ways nations have dealt with economic trade-offs. During the 20th century, for example, nations tried with varying degrees of success to two alternate ways to cope with economic trade-offs. One way, this is generally referred to as central economic planning. Yes?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Central economic planning. Central economic planning. It tried to centralize the decision-making by putting it under government control. By contrast, the other way, generally referred to as market capitalism, tried to resolve the dilemma of economic trade-offs by allowing the decisions of millions of buyers and sellers in decentralized and competitive markets to determine resource allocation and distribution. Okay?